From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Ghost of the Civil War. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. For the first time on record, Americans are more likely to die of an accidental opioid overdose than in a motor vehicle crash, according to a new report from its National Safety Council. Folks, it's an epidemic. Doing less sitting and more moving is tied to living longer, according to a new study. Replacing 30 minutes per day of just hanging around and doing nothing with 30 minutes of physical activity at a light intensity was associated with a 17% lower risk of early death in a study published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. Our condolences tonight to singer and actor Pat Boone on the death of his wife, Shirley. Shirley died several days ago. She was 84 years old. The 1950 star confirmed that his wife died to People magazine, saying they shared a wonderful, blessed life together for 65 years, and he knew one day they'll be reunited with his beloved. President Donald Trump used an address Monday to the American Farm Bureau Convention to dig in on his call for a border wall, even as new polling indicates most Americans oppose his administration's strategy of demanding money for the U.S.-Mexico barrier in exchange for ending the partial government shutdown. I flew from St. Louis to Denver to do our Beyond Belief television programs, and while in Denver coming back to Los Angeles yesterday, I was talking to some TSA employees, none of whom had received checks yet. But they're still coming into work, doing what they do. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolonist.com with us. John, your predictions are coming true. This is a disaster.
It is a disaster, and it's having about $1 billion a day to the U.S. economy. And, you know, Wall Street is essentially on hold. You know, even though that it did rise, it is true, of like 1,200 points or so in the last week. I mean, there's a great reluctance on the part of anybody to really start buying into anything because no one really knows how long this is going to go on. Speculation today is it's going to go on until he delivers his State of the Union speech, which is on the 29th of January. But even after that, you're looking at a recalcitrance on the part of both sides right now, to the point where the ones that have been tossed under the bus here are really federal employees. And I think everybody would be served by letting these folks go back to work. They're performing rather vital services. I don't think anybody wants to wait any longer in lines for TSA than they already do.
Hey, I wanted to ask you a question. With the Mueller probe, who's paying them, and are they getting a salary?
Well, of course. I mean, that's completely funded. So, you know, Mueller is, and I think a lot of this, George, too, does relate to the Mueller probe. I think Pelosi and Schumer believe that there's going to be some kind of bombshell that's going to happen, in the next few weeks as he wraps up his final report. But a report on Sunday on, I think, Face the Nation, or maybe it was on the ABC show, with Jonathan Carl said that his inside connections, I mean, whatever extent this is worth anything, have said there's not going to be any bombshell. It's going to be completely anticlimactic, and it's going to give nothing, you know, to the Democrats or the Republicans as far as, you know, any closure on this whole idea. And you have this report that came out over the weekend that Trump is somehow an employee or, you know, somehow owned and operated by the Kremlin. And that was an FBI investigation. And Lindsey Graham, now that he's the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has said he plans to open up an investigation into what was their evidence to possibly open up an investigation on Trump, suggesting that he was actually an employee of the Kremlin. And, you know, you heard this Washington Post report that came out following up on that. More of the same, really, about a meeting that Trump had with Vladimir Putin in Hamburg, Germany, and one in Helsinki, in which the notes of the translator or whoever was doing the transcript there were returned to Trump so that no one could find out any details of what they discussed. So the implication is he's an employee of the Kremlin, and something has got to give with this, George, because, I mean, this has been going on like a year and a half now. You got some facts that you want to really put out there that are real facts, put them out there. But all this wild speculation is doing no one any good, and I don't think that there's going to be any resolution on this government shutdown until after this Mueller report comes out.
And it better happen soon then. John, thank you. OnlineColumnist.com. Here's some good news, though. Unemployment among America's military veterans reached an all-time low last year. For the first time, unemployment among the post-9/11 vets fell below 4%, so that is good news. NBC Universal has announced that it will launch its own streaming service in 2020, joining other legacy media companies in the streaming business that is dominated now by Netflix. Well, there's talk that that Chinese landing on the far side of the moon was fake, according to some conspiracy theorists. Well, who knows, but that's what they think. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Dr. Sky Stephen Cates. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, George. Good to be with you as always. Hey, I wanted to talk in our segment here mostly about the big event that our entire coast audience can see, and that is the upcoming total lunar eclipse, some 5 days and 20 hours away to be exact. Many of us don't know this. It's the full wolf supermoon, the total lunar eclipse that'll take place in the zodiac constellation of Cancer, the Crab. But on a more technical note, George, this is interesting. All these eclipses come from these Seiros cycles, like a 19-year repetitive cycle. This one happens to be the 27th eclipse of 73 over a period of some 1,280 years. The next one in this Seiros that we'll see another one like this occurs on January the 31st of 2037. But, George, what about closer to home? The last total lunar eclipse, many of us remember, just about a year ago, January 30th last year. The next one, jot this down, folks, May the 26th of 2021, and then another one on November the 8th of 2022. So, George, here's some tips on seeing it. The eclipse begins with its partial phases this Sunday evening, Eastern Standard Time, around 10:30 p.m., naturally 7:30 p.m. on the West Coast. But the real good part of this is the maximum time, the so-called blood of the moon or the blood moon, 62 minutes of totality. So get those cameras out, get those telescopes out, because the temperatures drop on the moon, whether or not the Chinese object landed on the far side, whether it did or didn't. Temperatures rage on the sun side of the moon when it's nearly at full phase at around 260 degrees Fahrenheit, dropping down during the eclipse to about 200 below zero. And, George, something fascinating as we close before the live sky. A solar eclipse always occurs about 2 weeks before or after a lunar eclipse. And that is a fact, and it's all about the nodes. But in the live sky, folks, George, it's amazing. If you look in the morning sky, this ever-growing conjunction of both Jupiter and Venus is occurring. If you look in the morning sky just before sunrise, you'll see this high up into the southeast. They're closest at about the 22nd of January. Dr. Sky reminds everyone to always remember to keep their eyes to the skies and email me at drsky@cox.net. And, George, obviously this eclipse is something that people should go out and hopefully with clear skies take advantage of it.
And I'll see you in a few weeks at Alien Snowfest up
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that, George, and I will bring a coat and my skis.
Yes, you will. All right. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
Full information on that little trip with Stephen Cates on our events at coasttocoastam.com. In a moment, one of our most requested guests, David Politis, back with us, talking about his latest work, Bigfoot Wild Men and Giants, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Well, he brought us the Missing 411 series, an incredible story about people simply vanishing from parks. David Politis has a professional background that includes 20 years in law enforcement and senior executive positions in technology sectors. In 2012, he was an invited speaker at the 2012 National Association of Search and Rescue annual conference in Tahoe. The presentation was the findings of his report detailed in his first book, Missing 411. David Politis, back on Coast to Coast. Hello, David.
How are you doing, George?
Good. I'm looking forward to this. And gosh, it just doesn't stop, does it?
You know, it just keeps rolling, unfortunately. And it's a sad reality of our life.
I'm thinking that we're beginning to hone in on what's happening to these people, and it's not a very good thing. What's your take?
Well, for the viewers who don't know, I did a 2-hour special for the History Channel. It aired on January 5th, and it chronicled my work, and I was very fortunate to get 2 hours on there. We delved into a couple of cases. We interviewed Dr. Brandenburg, a physicist, and in the cases that we worked, the people essentially vanished into nothingness. One was on the site of Mount Shasta. The guys he was with could see miles from where they last saw their partner, and he was a 10-minute walk ahead of them with no obstructions, no nothing, and he just disappeared. And in that special, we went deep into it and kind of looked at all the variables. There's no animal predation up that high. There's none of these things. And really, it's a big conundrum. Brandenburg came up with the idea that it might be related to a portal, which was interesting, and something we looked into. And it's... who knows, really, what's going on right now?
I want to really delve into that in our second hour with you, David, when we take phone calls as well. But your latest Bigfoot book, tell us about this. Another incredible story.
So this one I kind of fell into. I'm still 100% committed to the missing people side of the fence. They're unrelated topics. And in this, I wrote two other Bigfoot books, The Hoopa Project and Tribal Bigfoot. And those I used affidavits on the witnesses, meaning that they had to sign an affidavit under penalty of perjury for what they saw. And we brought in a noted FBI-trained forensic artist to draw the sketches of what the people saw. In this book, I stumbled into it kind of through a back door. I was doing the archival searches on missing people. And I was going back to the 1700s. And I noticed that there were articles in the newspapers about something that we would know as Bigfoot or Sasquatch, but back in the 1700s, 1800s, it was called the Wild Man. And, yeah, there's a lot of maybe side stories about people living off the grid, et cetera, that would be called Wild Men. But these that I started to cut out years ago were about a large biped, hair all over the body, enormous in size, long arms, etc. And I got to put up the thanks to Tom Powell, another Bigfoot researcher out of Oregon, that he really, when I saw his presentation about how all of the things in our world may be tied together, meaning mounds, giants, Bigfoot, I started to pay attention to that after I saw his presentation. And I started to accumulate these stories. And not only was I finding wild men stories from hundreds of years ago, but I was also finding stories about how farmers and ranchers and fishermen were finding giant skeletons. And at the beginning, I kind of thought, you know, maybe this is just hocus pocus, but there were too many of them.
Too many of them, yeah.
And the phenomenal thing to me was in many of the stories, they talked about turning over the skeleton to the Smithsonian. And in other instances, they turned them over to state museums. And I know other researchers that have followed this up, and the Smithsonian claims they don't have any giant skeletons from North America. But there were too many to say, how could this be happening? This has got to be true. And then in the stories that I was accumulating, it seemed like the descriptions of the wild men, they would call them giants many times. And then in the articles about the giant skeletons, they would say, yeah, these skeletons were between 7 and 9 feet tall. And sometimes they had articles of pottery. Other times they had articles of tools near them. And at other times it was jewelry. And the association date, time, and location, what I did was it's a very simple book. And I kind of wrote it with the pessimist in mind because I have a few friends that are like that.
The pessimist or the skeptic, David?
Both.
Okay.
I think both. And the first article that I actually pulled, that I put in on one of the very first pages, was somebody that we probably, I know you know him, George, but I think the rest of the audience probably knows him as well, and that's Jacques Vallée. Very, very smart man, great researcher. And he put out a book about 3 years ago, and it was about the forward movement of UFO research. Well, he had a story in there from September 17th, 1680. And it was a short quote. Here's what it said. It said, "A large black cloud-like mass landed in a field, releasing a huge hair-covered being that was seen briefly and then disappeared." And I know that there's a lot of people in the world that think, well, maybe the Bigfoot is related to some kind of ET or UFO.
That comes up a lot.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that was really the first article I put in just to make people think. And then from there, there was an article May 28th, 1772 in the Maryland Gazette that also talks about a fully hair-covered biped that you and I would know as Bigfoot. And I took great restraint in putting in other articles that may have been construed as an ape or a gorilla. And these were really only Bigfoot-related topics. The funny thing about it was, is that as I'm accumulating these and I'm putting them in the book and I'm looking at them, and really the book is 99% just articles, dates, and the location where the article was pulled. And it's a tabletop-sized book. And so really, as people start to browse through it, you start to think, is this all true? But no, all the articles are true. And it's hard to believe that the history of this goes back as far as it does.
Well, the fact that it goes back so far and it's documented is fascinating all by itself.
Exactly. I mean, obviously people were having these issues and encountering these beings, and you'd think, well, maybe it's only in a certain part of the country, and in reality it goes coast to coast. And I have articles in there from California, articles from the East Coast, articles from Canada. And they all kind of fit what we know as the biped. A lot of the articles state that it has extremely long arms, giant in size. There's a few articles in there that imply that there might have been some aggression, one where it killed a dog, some other ones where they confront people. But in reality, it's a lot of mundane type behavior where they're seen by people doing certain things and then they're running away. And in fact, I found some articles in there about a wild woman. And I thought that was pretty rare. And the same sort of description, hair all over the body, but they could tell it was a woman. And one of the notes I put in there that I added was that I think it's telling that back in the 1700s, they named this a wild man.
Hmm.
They didn't give it an animal connotation. They gave it a human-type connotation.
How many of the stories come from Native Americans, David?
Almost none.
Really?
No. These are straight frontline newspapers. I mean, big newspapers, New York, Boston, Chicago. These aren't like third and fourth tier. A lot of them are mainstream big papers that presented this.
And they handled it as a straight news article?
They did.
Interesting. So no 40 in a push or anything like that.
No, and I think the frustrating part of this, like a lot of the things that are discussed on your show, is that nobody wants to say where these skeletons are found or where this evidence might be. It seems as though they just disappeared.
Has anybody reported being hurt by these creatures?
There's a couple times where a carriage was going across a road in a forest, and they talk about almost hitting one, and it almost sounds like it's a defense mechanism, and there's confrontation. You know, it's very rare, and I wrote my two Bigfoot books before I ever came into the missing person arena, and in those Bigfoot books, and at the time I was doing the Bigfoot research full-time, there were almost no articles about Bigfoot injuring anything or anybody. And then as soon as my books come out about missing people in the woods, people start coming up with these stories. And I've heard a ton of them. But I want everyone to think about this, that when you hear one of these stories on a podcast or you read something on a website and there's no names, there's no dates, don't believe it.
That's a good point. David, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment with David Politis. His website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about his latest work, Bigfoot, Wild Men, and Giants. Gosh, I was looking at my calendar today in the office, and I'm going, we're only a couple months away. The historic Everett Theater event in Everett, Washington. That's not too far. March 23rd, that's the event. And full information at coasttocoastam.com at the events at the top of the homepage or in the revolving picture carousel reel where you've got a direct link to the Everett Theater to pick up your own tickets. Lots of great guests, including, of course, the prophecy expert John Hogue. Tickets available by calling 425-258-6766. 425-258-6766. The Everett Theater in Everett, Washington. That event is March 23rd, or again, you get the tickets straight off our website with a direct link to the theater. Then May 11th, Columbus, Ohio. We've got a little room, but it's a small theater, and tickets are really going quickly there, including the Ghost Whisperer Marianne Winkowski, one of our special guests. You can get tickets the same way at our website or call the Kappa Ticket Center at the Lincoln Theater in Columbus, Ohio at 614-469-0939. That's 614-469-0939. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with David Politis. We'll be talking about Bigfoot, Wild Men, and Giants this hour. Next hour, we'll get into his Missing 411 series, including some of his new works there. He's got another bestseller. You may be one of the most prolific writers, David, out there today.
No, I don't think so.
You really are. You do great research, and you're fast at what you do.
Well, I have a lot of luck from and a lot of opportunity that comes from your audience as well. I mean, I get a lot of heads up on cases that I would never even hear about from all over the world that are Coast listeners, so it's helpful.
As you approached the work with Bigfoot, Wild Men, and Giants, what was your initial approach? What was your theme?
Really, I didn't have one. I was mainly just doing the background research on missing cases going back hundreds of years, and I just kept falling into these articles about, you know, a creature that was titled in articles, Wild Men. And initially, I just ignored it. And then after a while, I started paying attention. I probably lost 100 articles over the years because I just didn't pull them. But in the short term, I started to pull them out. And then I started to make the relationship to giants as well. And I never really knew that we had these discoveries of giant skeletons, say 7 to 9 feet tall in the U.S. until just the last couple of years. And so as I was pulling articles on missing people, I started to just pull the articles on giants and Bigfoot and put them on the side. And then as time went on and I would take trips and have the patience to look through these things, I started to decipher what was relevant and what wasn't. And that's how this book got put together. And it's, like I said, it's really just articles by date that just blow your mind that they were written about and somebody was interested in this topic years ago and it was current.
Pull out an article or two from one of the books, David, from this book, and give us a story or two if you could.
Sure. The Marion Star, an Ohio newspaper, November 20th, 1893.
Wow, way back.
Way back. And there's an article that says, a giant skeleton is found in a gravel bank near Clarendon. And the article goes on to talk about some guys that are building a road. And they're using gravel from a person's farm, the Miller farm. And as they were pulling gravel out of an embankment, some gravel came down, a skeleton came out, and based on the size of the skeleton, the coroner or the person at the time that was investigating this said it had to have been a giant. And then the article says, 7-foot skeletons are a rare thing. They've been found before, but this is the first in Marion County. The belief that the skeleton is that of a giant, which geologists say did exist at an earlier day, is rather discouraged by the location of the find. But it is difficult to imagine a 7-foot or 7-foot 6-inch Marion County citizen, Indian or white man, who would have found a grave in such a location. And again, mainstream probably is putting this down, but then there are a couple articles where they actually, academics came in to help excavate and work it. And there were some Indian mounds that were also excavated where they also found these unusual things. And like I say, initially the knee-jerk reaction is, oh, this is bogus. Then when you see the newspapers that are writing these things, you start to think, well, I don't think it's bogus. I think there's something to it, and maybe something's being concealed from us. Who knows?
And if you're right about that, why would they conceal? What are they hiding?
Well, I think right now that you got to understand our science is so advanced that DNA can tell us a lot. And maybe there's something in that DNA that they don't want us to know.
Like it might be extraterrestrial?
Maybe it would fall in the face of what history is telling us about the first people to come to our continent. I mean, was it Native Americans? Was it First Nations people from Canada? Was it somebody else?
Well, if it was somebody else, Christopher Columbus is rolling over in his grave, isn't he?
Well, and here's another article, George, in Abilene Weekly, Kansas, December 31st, 1897. And it says, one of the three recently discovered curiously framed symmetrical mounds at Maple Creek, Wisconsin, has been opened, and therein found the skeleton of a man of gigantic size. The bones measured from head to foot over 9 feet and were in a fair state of preservation. The skull is as large as a half bushel measure. Some finely tempered rods of copper and other relics were lying near the bones. The mound from which these remains of a prehistoric race were taken is 10 feet high, 30 feet long, varying from 6 to 8 feet in width.
My gosh.
The two mounds of lesser size will be excavated later. Now, to me, part of that interest is, what were these copper relics that were found?
And that tells me that there was some technology behind these creatures.
Well, for sure they had tools, right?
Yeah.
And what happened to all these tools? And, in fact, what happened to...
What happened to all of them?
Exactly. Now, there's a lot of insinuation that these might have been Native Americans in some of the articles, but not always. Here's an article where science kind of got into it as well, and this in the Times of Pennsylvania, December 12, 1897... It says he was 7 feet high. The bones of an Indian found in Maryland that indicate a giant race. It says there has just been received by the Maryland Academy of Sciences the skeleton of an Indian 7 feet tall. It was discovered near Antium 10 days ago. There are now skeletons of three powerful Indians at the Academy who at one time in their wildness roamed over the state of Maryland armed with such instruments as they were able to gather and still taught them to use. Two of these skeletons belong to individuals evidently of gigantic size. The vertebrae and bones in the legs are nearly as thick as those of a horse. Now think about that. Thick as of a horse?
That's pretty big.
And the length of long bones exceptional. The skulls are of fine proportions, sample in the walls of moderate thickness, but the great strength and stiffened behind by a powerful occipital ridge. The curves of the forehead are moderate and not retreating, suggesting intelligence and connected with jaws of moderate development. It goes on, but a lot of people who have read this have said, well, Dave, maybe this wasn't an Indian. Maybe this was a Bigfoot.
And what would be the difference between wild men and Bigfoot, if anything?
I think from the descriptions that I've gathered over almost 250 years, there is none.
It's one and the same.
I think it is.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, they talk about long arms. They talk about hair all over the body. They talk about it acting with intelligence. And they talk about it being across the U.S. in areas that we know it to be.
Do they talk about offspring?
You know, that's really a good one. And in descriptions and sightings you hear about today, that's really, I would say, toddlers and females are a very rare occurrence that somebody sees those. And in all the research, I think there might have been one case where one person saw something that appeared to be a child or a young one, and then there were like three or four cases where somebody described a female, hair all over the body, you know, etc.
And that's kind of mind-boggling why the female species and the children, the offspring, would be tucked away. Maybe it's a security thing. Maybe you know, the Bigfoot doesn't want them out? Who knows?
Yeah, and the Native Americans have always told me when Harvey and I have gone out that a male will always lead and the family will stay behind. So you may only see one,
exactly,
but there's probably more behind that you're not seeing.
What do you think the population size might be?
Wow, that's a million-dollar question, but there has to be many, 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 because there's sightings almost daily somewhere in the U.S. and Canada and China and USSR and et cetera.
You know, even if they had a population of 5,000, that's not a lot compared to human beings.
I don't think that would cover the U.S. as thickly as it appears.
No, I don't either. I mean, you think of, you know, what is the deer population, for example, in this country?
Millions in California.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't see them every other day.
No, and people always ask me, they say, well, Dave, how come we're not finding bones? And I've talked to some fish and game people and trackers, and, you know, there's probably 50,000 or more bear in California, and none of them have ever seen a bear skeleton in the woods.
What has intrigued me about your work, David, is there appears to be some kind of intelligence behind these creatures. These aren't animals. These are thinking, breathing creatures, and they could very well be the missing link.
Well, I do think that there's a high level of intelligence, because if there wasn't, then I think they would have been captured. I think they would have been, we could have seen, we could have watched an habituation occur. We could put them under surveillance and learn a lot, but never has happened. So, yeah, I agree with you. They're very smart, and I think it's underestimated by a portion of our research world that how smart they really may be. And once you get into this and you understand, okay, well, you know, it wasn't too long ago that we discovered the ape, and it wasn't that long ago that we discovered certain bears in China. And for something this large to be studied by researchers in China and the USSR, and even in the United States and Canada, there's something to it. But there's something to it, I think, that science doesn't want to know.
They're afraid?
I think there's something to it that would make everyone uncomfortable. And I go back to, because I was deeply involved in the DNA study that Dr. Ketchum did. And contrary to what everyone thinks, I think that's the most valuable thing we have right now as a research tool, where we got 110 different DNA samples. We had blood, saliva, hair. It went to four independent certified labs in the United States. They all came back with the same result. That result being is that we can follow the female side of the DNA back 12 to 15,000 years into the Middle East, and the male side of the equation doesn't exist in 352 billion base pairs.
Wow.
In GenBank, which is essentially impossible.
You've cited a lot of older articles. Are we still getting a lot of sightings today?
Oh, yeah. I think if you kept track, probably multiple sightings, two or three, maybe four, go public every week. But there's probably 10 times that.
That
either people are uncomfortable in saying anything, or they don't know where to report it.
Right, right. Or they think they're going to be ridiculed or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone to so many conferences, and people come up to me and they say, you know, my wife and I saw this, and the wife's standing right next to the man, and we don't know who to really tell it to that would believe us. And we were driving down there. This happened, and guy's driving down the road in Arkansas, going to his house 3 or 4 miles away. They see a big lump on the side of the road in a ditch. They slow down. That lump stands up on 2 feet, completely covered with hair. They said, Dave, we know what we saw, but we're not going to tell anybody. They think we're nuts.
And only a fool would dress up in a costume and wander around like that.
Well, they'd get shot, you'd think.
Exactly. And it's happened before.
Of course. Yeah, no, of course. And in fact, you said something, George, and I'm sure you'll probably get feedback on it. You said, well, it's probably not an animal because it has so much intelligence, blah, blah, blah. There's a section of that research world who adamantly thinks it is an animal.
What do you think?
I definitely think it's way more on the human side of the equation than it is on the animal side.
Especially if it had tools, for crying out loud.
Well, there's a in one of my books, I refer to a book that a Native American wrote up in the Klamath portion of California. And they talked about living with the Indian devils. And they said in the early 1800s, they could find them by their fire. And if they came into camp in the middle of the night and they stole things from our camp, then the warriors would go back in mass, find them the next morning by the place they built their fire. And over the years, they realized it and they stopped using fire.
David's book is called Bigfoot, Wild Men, and Giants. Where do you get the book, David?
I don't sell on Amazon. It's only through our website, NA Bigfoot Search, like North America, nabigfootsearch.com, and you can get it there.
Well, it's a great read. Next hour, we're going to talk about missing 411 law. He'll explain what that is, and we'll take some phone calls. David Politis with us. Any more? The History Channel two-hour special was cool, and I assume it's going to be running quite a bit.
I think it's going to be on demand for probably the next several months. I don't know what their schedule is like for repeating it, but I think the response has been really, really good, so I'd be surprised if they didn't.
And didn't you do one a year or so ago?
We did a movie called Missing 411 that's
yeah.
on iTunes and Amazon.
Exactly. And, you know, I got to thank our colleague George Knapp for bringing you to the table for us, David, years ago.
And, well, I'm very indebted to Mr. Knapp and yourself.
Well, he's one of the good guys, to be sure, and he loves this field. I mean,
he does, and he's well-versed in it like you are.
Well, he's the best for when it comes to these things, and nobody can get close to him for UFO investigations.
No, he definitely knows his stuff.
Your gut, because I know you, your gut is telling you something about these missing people, isn't it?
You know, George, I would like to say that I do, but in reality, I'm not that smart.
And
I won't.
Come on, you're downplaying your incredible role, David.
No, really. I mean, honestly, I'm a pretty good investigator. I can pull things together, but to know all of the possible suspects that people bring to me on a weekly basis, you'd have to be an expert in 25 different fields. I'm not. And so far, the evidence doesn't really point to anything specific. I mean, when somebody just disappears and there's no tracks, there's no scent trail for the dogs to follow, there's not much left. So who can the suspects be at that point? In other instances, if they're found in water and the coroner can't determine the cause of death, that's pretty unusual.
That is
Why
unusual.
Can't we figure that out?
I heard a story a couple weeks ago of some parents with a little child in the woods, and the kid was running around a tree, and he ran around a tree and didn't come back out. He was gone.
I haven't heard that one.
I mean, these are crazy stories.
Yeah, and again, one thing I tell people is that when you go to YouTube, don't think that because a channel says David Politis or says Missing 411 that it's anything related to me. The only channel we have is the Can-Am. It's called the Can-Am, like Canadian American Missing Project on YouTube. All the rest are frauds, hoaxes, and lies.
Or pirates.
Exactly.
Yeah, that happens too. Canammissing.com.
Canammissing.com. You got it.
CanammissingMISSING.com. David Politis, our special guest. Next hour, we'll talk about some missing 411 situations, and we'll take phone calls here on Coast to Coast. How long are you going to keep doing this, David? You're the best. Don't stop.
Well, as long as you keep having me on, George.
We'll keep having you on. Absolutely. But there may be even some bigger things in your horizon that you don't even know about, but maybe we'll tell you later. David Politis with us on Coast to Coast. We're going to come back and take phone calls with him next.